You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
So Mike Etor is a Lethbridge Trophy winner, and I've been trying to get him on the program for a while. Well, I had him on and we talked, and then I said, "Hey, would you come back?" And so he's been out rehabbing. Been out rehabbing real estate. So I'm talking about Alex Hollins, and I get this message. Hey, Mac, I'll be ready. I'll be prompt. What? And then I'm thinking, and then I look. Yeah, I wrote it down for next week. So Mike Etor is going to join us, which is awesome. Mike, I think his company is called Fidelity Leadership or Fidelis Leadership. And he's big-time leadership human being. And so we're going to talk leadership with him as soon as my – I'm not going to call him early. So as soon as my – there's people that notice this kind of stuff, like, too. A friend of mine who went to the Naval Academy – just sent me a text. Hey, I've eaten 31 burritos in a week. Does that make me interview material? It absolutely does. Marines like stuff like that. I mean, a lot of people would just hear that, like 31 burritos. What an idiot. Marines wouldn't say that, though. They would go, whoa, dude's got it going on. What was the 31 burritos about? Joining us right now is the one and only Mike Etor, real estate tycoon, developer, world traveler, and leader in general. Welcome back to All Marine Radio, man. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, Mac, how are you? Are we live right now?
We are, so be careful what you say. Don't say anything too honest.
Yeah, I had a snappy retort to that real estate tycoon, but I guess I won't be able to say that.
No, go ahead. You know, my sister thought we were off the air when I had her on talking about something recently. And she made a backhanded comment about my dad and his second wife, which my friends and other people thought was hilarious. And my sister didn't take it. My sister didn't take it very well. So it always makes for a good fair, Mike, and I never edit it out because it's always good stuff. So feel free.
Yeah.
Anytime you want to skew in that direction, I'm about it.
Were you at TBS, Mac, the time when they, you had the instructor mics, they would wire you up.
Yeah.
And, they were wireless. And, one of the instructors was all wired up, puts the class on the break, goes into the head to take a pee and, tells another instructor, he goes, do you see that WM lieutenant in the second row? Man, she is smoking hot. You know, making remarks like that. This is being broadcast to the whole classroom.
No.
I mean, fortunately, he didn't say anything really that bad, but when he came back in,
everybody's staring at him.
When he came back in, the class gave him a standing ovation, you know?
No.
Yeah, he was the wrong kind of famous for a few days.
I don't know. I'm trying to think if we wore mics when I was there. And I was there a couple of years before you, but I don't know that when I taught, maybe I was teaching in the wrong classrooms. I don't know that we projected our voices like men back then, Mike.
Yeah, that's what I did too. I always used to refuse it. I just told them I don't need it.
I don't need it. I'll project my voice. What do they call those RFIs? What was the critique they filled out afterwards?
Oh, the IRFs.
The IRFs.
IRFs.
Yes.
Yeah, instructional review form or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Exactly. That we would edit. Like, oh, that one's going nowhere. And who is that? Yeah. What's that lieutenant's name? Let me have that one right here. I'll stick it in my pocket. The it's like handing the oversight document to the person being oversighted on. That's not the smartest thing. That was not a good system. And
I had one written on me one time back. I always regretted not keeping it and framing it. I was on the combat panel, which shows you there was a dearth of combat experience people then if I was on the panel. But we got an IRF in, and someone said, you're not going to believe this one. And it was it was at the height of tailhook and all that, so everybody was kind of jumpy. It was a female officer who was a VSEP. She was former enlisted, and she proceeded to write an IRF on me saying, Captain Etor didn't say anything wrong, but most of his talk was on very violent topics. I mean, very, extreme violent. And I'm thinking to myself, combat panel, combat leadership panel, violent topics. And she was somehow offended by that, And of course that one didn't go anywhere either, but I always wonder what the rationale was in her mind behind that,
When you flip through those, you see some interesting takes. And so the other thing is it's not like you're not a Marine and held accountable for those things. Like, come here, what did you write here? And so it's interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. No, I'll tell you what, and one of the things you learn very quickly in broadcasting is who's controlling my microphone. Because it has ended many bright careers by somebody leaving a microphone open and you being you, or me, not you being you, Mike, but me being me. That would be certainly enough to get somebody fired. And as a professional, the first question you ask is, where is the control for my microphone? And I need to have it. And so otherwise you shut your mic off. So there you go. Little professional advice for everybody who aspires to do anything in the media. Know who's got your mic on. I mean, they just ran some video of Matt Lauer at a break. He's on the phone.
I saw that.
Did you see that? If you haven't seen this, it's pretty amazing video. TMZ had it. And he's got his elbows on the set. And, now this feed, he doesn't know if his microphone's open because he doesn't control it. So, you assume it's open. He's on his cell phone saying, yeah, I'll meet you up front. Bye. And then he looks over to his right, and I guess it was Meredith Vieira, but she's leaned forward. And he looks over and he says, nice looking sweater. And then in the next breath he says, and keep leaning over like that, it's a great view. And then he goes back to what he's doing.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, he just said that in front of God and everybody to his co-host.
Yeah.
That you watch that, you're like, holy smokes. That's a pretty brazen dude.
Did you see the one on Lawrence O'Donnell having a meltdown between the live goes? That was a classic. I got to admit that I might be a twisted mind. I actually got some kind of perverse pleasure from watching that.
Oh, it's the best because it's them. It's not just them saying something off color, but it's Lauer being a predator. It's you see his a glimpse of the way he was. And O'Donnell, is blatantly abusive. It's not like, hey, time the F out. Let's get this together. It's him being angry, and you're like, whoa, Larry, what's up? All right, Mike Etor joins us. Mike's been on the program before. He's a Marine Corps legend. At least he was in my time. That Etor guy's coming to the basic school. What? Oh, yeah. So and so is his little twin brother, Green. Like, who are these guys? Oh, there's these crazy leftwich guys. There's always a bit of an aura around people that win that award. So, without focusing on that, give us about a 60 to 120 second bio so we can knock the rust off everybody's memory, and then we'll talk leadership.
Sure. I was born in New York State, lived there until I was 10, Schenectady, New York, moved to New Jersey. My father was working for the federal government, so he actually worked at Picatinny Arsenal, home of the famous Picatinny Rail System. And I graduated high school in 74, enlisted in the Marine Corps, did 4 years, including a tour on the drill field, got out at my EIS, went to college at East Stroudsburg University, which we were proud to call the phys ed mecca of the East Coast. So I was a proud phys ed major. It was between that and quantum physics, and I took phys ed, so took the hard way. And so I did 4 years there, wrestled during my time there, and then got commissioned in 82, infantry officer throughout, infantry and infantry-related billets, mostly East Coast, combat deployments to Grenada, Beirut, Lebanon, and the Gulf War, and Quantico. I'll add that as a semi-combat deployment. That was a rough time during the early Clinton years there. So we all saw some things going on then that doesn't surprise me where we're at right now, Mac, but it all started back then. But anyway, that's it. I retired in 98, went into business. I worked for a professional staffing company, about a $1 billion-plus company called K-Force, and they are professional finance and accounting and IT headhunters. They find people jobs. I started there as the director of leadership development. I ran a leadership development program, ultimately became in charge of most of the back office, most of the non-sales functions for 85 offices. I was the headquarters commandant, essentially. I was the guy running most of the support functions. And so I worked for them for almost 15 years, retired, goofed off for about a year, and then started my own executive coaching practice. And that's what I'm currently doing, is I coach senior executives or people that want to become senior executives someday. So I either do it on an individual basis or, I get called in to coach a whole executive team of 5 or 8 men and women, and they're having problems. It's leadership instruction. It's not a business consultancy. It's pretty much leadership. And that's it.
All right. There you have it. That is Mike Etor in 120 seconds. We have discussed, there's a number of issues that some cultural that bleed into the military, and I guess I want to start with that. I don't think young people change from generation to generation. I think young people are blank canvas, and onto that blank canvas is layered their environment and the culture they grow up in, and I think determines to some extent what they are and certainly what's acceptable in life. I think that we, as parents of our generation and the generation in front of us, deviated from the blueprint that the greatest generation had. We have sought through the years to make our children's lives much easier, to insulate them from the consequences of life, from failure, from coming back from failure, from part-time jobs and helping to pay for car insurance and cell phone, too. They're going to work for the rest of their lives. There's no sense of rushing that, yada, 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 yada. And then a school system that doesn't hold people back in most parts of the country, helicopter parents that won't allow failure, that intercede with coaches and teachers. And that's the world that kids grow up in. As opposed, and again, I'll contrast it to the greatest generation, but I would even contrast it into how you and I grew up as the sons of people in the greatest generation, or pretty close to it.
Yeah.
And we grew up much different than kids today. My argument is, though, that young people today need more structure. They need more leadership because they come from a world that doesn't give that. That doesn't buy into that or buys into it a la carte. I'll take this and I'll take that, but I won't take that that goes along with discipline. Well, then that's not really discipline. And so I want to get your general thoughts on, and then we, the same parents that are helicopter parents, we're now in leadership positions in the Department of Defense and the American military. And I think we are as reluctant to hold the line on structure, discipline, and hardness institutionally as we are with our families. And as a result, you see this, in the Navy I think is most visible right now, But you certainly saw it in the Marine Corps rear its head with the whole Marines United thing. And you see it with the Marine Corps when we have these failures at what I call the leadership at the point of confrontation. You know, Paris Island, most notably, urinating in Afghanistan,
yep.
still in the news after all these years. 3-5's incident in Hamidiya. And I could probably go on and name a few more. But these, if somebody stands up and says, we're not doing that, and if you want to fight, let's go, Etor. We'll fight right now, but I'm not doing that. None of those guys get, you know, the big chicken dinner. They don't go to the brig. They're not, their families aren't drugged through the streets. None of it. And so I'm curious about your thoughts about younger people, structure, our reluctance to seem to want to stick to it and give it to them. Your thoughts, Mike.
Yep. Before I start, Mac, remind me, I've got some stuff that I prepared about BOD, and it relates to this, about if I was to sec def for a day, what would I do?
I love that. I love that kind of stuff.
And also remind me to go back to my early experiences as an enlisted man with the tremendous racial problems we had in the Marine Corps at that time. Most of today's Marines, most of the Marines have been around for 20 or 30 years, don't remember that, but I do, and if anybody else was of that era, they certainly remember that. Remind me to go back to that and how we fixed it, because it directly relates to fixing some of the problems or issues that you just surfaced. But relative to your, so bottom line up front, I agree with everything you say. When I, you know, people have been cursing the younger generation for centuries, you know, the millennia. I saw a quote one time about, you know, these young people, if they don't care, they're slovenly. It was something like that. And I thought it was a modern quote. It was actually written by some Roman like 2,000 years ago. So there's a natural, you know, these guys aren't as hard as us or whatever the case may be. You know, I tell the story when I got orders to the drill field, I was very young. I was 20 years old. And I was eating, you know, lunch in the NCO section, and you know, some of the officers were coming up congratulating me. And this old master sergeant said, "Hey, Sergeant Etor, why is everybody, you know, what's going on? What'd you do?" I said, "Well, Pop, I got orders to DI school." Now he was an old Sol; he had been a drill instructor in the 50s, and this is 1976 right now. I said, "I got orders to DI school." He looked right at me, and his first comment was, "But you wear glasses." And I was like, "What?" He goes, "You wear glasses." And I said, "Obviously." And so long story made short, he sat down and told me he had been one tour on a drill field in the 50s, never went back, when in his day, you couldn't be a drill instructor if you wore glasses. Because somehow it was considered, you know, a Marine doesn't wear glasses. Manly Marine, we can't have a drill instructor out there wearing glasses.
Yeah,
it's kind of effeminate or whatever.
What is that?
So he just shook his head. I mean, he was a good guy, but I just saw him like, hey, no offense to this kid, but I mean, what in the hell is the Marine Corps coming to, you know? And I never forgot that. And he wasn't being personal about it. He just, you know, it was one of those things like, thank God I'm retiring soon, you know, this new Corps, letting drill instructors wear glasses, you know.
Right.
And I've told that story hundreds of times because obviously drill instructors can wear glasses. You get my point, you know.
You bet.
So relative to the millennials and all of that, I saw different Marines come in during my career, and I was always amazed that no matter how slack they were raised and all that, we pretty much snapped them into line pretty quickly.
Right.
And, you know, I always cringe when I chafe when I see articles about how soft the millennials are and all of that, because wasn't Dakota Meyer a millennial? I mean, these guys that have just done amazing, heroic things, even the guys that weren't decorated, just tough-ass Lance Corporal squad leader out there scrapping in Fallujah. That kid is a millennial. He's that soft generation. And what's the difference between him and the guys that are out in the civilian world that are so soft? Well, he's obviously been trained and all that, but it's a mindset. And so the bottom line is, I think what you would agree with, these guys that have been slinging in Afghanistan and Iraq, there's probably the same amount of shitbirds in the Marine Corps as it was during the Iwo Jima days and our days. We've always had turds. but the vast majority of Marines were actually quite good, quite dedicated, and they fought like hell. They fought, you know, with every bit of tenacity and bravery, courage, whatever you want to say, it's skill as any Marine of any era. And I don't think that's beyond debate as far as I'm concerned. So the folks that want to brand a whole generation as being soft, I think they're wrong. I think they're misinformed. And I think in some cases they're looking for the easy way out. So I touch with this in the business world. I talk to executives, they might be these new people, and I literally tell them, hey, you know, quite frankly, I think that's a cop out. I think it's bull, you know? And they look at me like, what do you mean? I said, you are in charge of your company. You own your company, or, you know, you're the CEO, you're the senior executive. Yes, they're different, but if you're saying that you've got to change the whole culture of your company because these new kids, you're reading articles about how they demand more attention, they want technical stuff, they want career progression. I said, no, that's all good and well, but you're going to change your whole company? I said, they still don't know jack about business. Why would you do that? And almost every one of them, Mac, looks at me with a look, or they say, I didn't know, really? I'm like, you're in charge. I said, is the military, is the Marine Corps changing everything because they've got a new generation of young guy coming in? And so they just shake their head. It's like I'm somebody from a biblical passage or something, like hitting him with a divining rod, you know, putting wisdom on him. It's amazing to me. And so the bottom line is, I'm rambling here, but these young people can be as smart, tough, disciplined, motivated. They can do whatever is demanded of them. You have to train them. You have to explain things, but they're no different. They're still human beings. Human nature hasn't changed. So that's my long answer to that is you give me millennials, and you give me, you know, if it's a Marine setting, you give me enough time, enough NCOs, we'll turn them into meat eaters that John Vassalon would have loved. In the business world, you give me young kids that want to learn, that accept that they don't know everything, and we'll turn them into Shark Tank guys pretty quickly.
Okay, so I think we both agree that young people are blank canvas, and they respond to what young people have always responded to, which is leadership that cares about them, leadership that requires things of them, leadership that spends time with them, and leadership that will correct them and point them in the right direction. Because as much as they may bitch about it, they know that that's the better path. And they didn't join the Marine Corps. Sergeant Major Brian Zickenfuss, I don't know if you know him, but I remember him saying, hey, nobody joins the Marine Corps to be average. They come in the Marine Corps to do great things, because you could be average in other branches of the service very easily. Okay? Nobody looks at that boot camp with all the craziness and all the mythology that we put out about it and says, I'll do that just to be average. He said it's not. So yeah. Our challenge is to take that and do something with it. And you know, I've always remembered that when I talk about this. Talk to me about that manager, because there's a disconnect. And you look at what the Navy's going through right now. We're talking about performance so poor that – in the 2 minutes where you know before you collide with another vessel at sea, right, and you know it's coming, you can't get these skyscrapers to not hit, okay? It's at some point you're like, oh, my God. Nobody has the presence to hit the collision alarm or send the ship to general quarters, which would have alleviated the circumstances in which 17 sailors died in their racks, asleep, drowning in water. Nobody had the performance bar that low that nobody could do that. So institutionally, with people like you and me in those positions, and probably a little bit younger, truth be told, than you and I, what has happened where we don't believe in our own standards, where we won't enforce those standards. And I'll give you an example. I just spoke at a ball recently, and I had a lieutenant come up to me and tell me this story. We went on a deployment. We came back, and the Marines got a shirt that had a saying on it. And the saying was kind of a motivational saying, but the way that they used to say it was ridiculing the battalion commander and the battalion sergeant major because of their leadership. And they had that made into a shirt that they wore. And this lieutenant telling me this story, and he said, I got them together. I told them I never wanted to see that shirt again, that it was disrespectful in nature, and I didn't care that it was olive drab, that it should never, ever be worn during working hours. And it shouldn't be worn in civilian hours either, but certainly during working hours, never worn. And he said there was complete silence, and I know it didn't make him happy at all. And he asked me what I thought. I said, you did the right thing. Everything you did. But let me just tell you, we struggle with that. Do you want to be the asshole? And so, Mike, tell me what has happened to us institutionally where we are seeing the things that we're seeing in the Department of Defense that are downright disturbing. And look, in the midst of all the Navy nonsense, right, collisions, you have SEALs allegedly murdering another SF guy over possibly him knowing about them using a fund that pays informants for their own. Yeah. You have, in the midst of this, you have an RF-18 pilot up in Whidbey Island, right, flying a picture of a cock and a set of balls in the sky, thinking this will be funny. And you're watching it and you're saying, this is an organization that seems to be out of control. So I'm curious, institutionally, because this seems to be, that disconnect seems to be what you've turned into a consultant, not a consulting business. What do you call it?
Yep. Coaching, executive coaching.
Executive coaching business. Yep. What's happened?
You know, I think it, I'm not an expert on this, not even close, Mac, but I think it started probably with the 60s. If you look around, a lot of people in charge now, Congress, in senior civilian positions, children of the 60s, And so, if you look at high school yearbooks, up until about the mid 60s, guys used to wear shirt and ties to high school.
Right.
It was not just fashionable. It was considered, high school was considered a kind of a formal thing, And then, the Vietnam and the counterculture came in. And so, and I'm not saying some of that stuff didn't need to go. And don't get me wrong, I don't think everybody needs to wear a suit to high school and all that. But we started relaxing everything to the point that nothing became important. If this was a custom or a law or a tradition or a societal practice that required any kind of conformity or discipline or accountability, it was attacked to the point now where, let me give you an example, Matt.
Okay.
I was in, you're a baseball guy. I was in Little League. And you ever see the movie Bad News Bears?
Of course.
You saw the fat little catcher,
yep.
Fat kid. That was me. I was a fat kid. I was definitely the fat kid, I had to play my first three games of Little League with my shirt on, but with Levi's because they didn't have pants big enough for me yet. So I'm a big kid, big athletic kid, but no doubt packing some extra beef. There's no doubt about that.
Okay.
I am the quintessential fat kid, and naturally I was a catcher,
Right. And you're Italian, so it all goes together. That's how that all works.
I was mainlining manigots, eating, raviolis, all that stuff. You know what I mean? It was just, no problem. But, so anyway, I'm a decent player. Now, I was in danger of getting thrown out at first base from the outfield. Like, if I hit something to the deep outfield, I had to run, hustle. because they knew, hey, we may be able to throw him out because he can't run worth a damn, you know? Now, if I got my ass into the ball, it was going over the fence in a line drive, like it was shot out of a howitzer, you know?
Right.
So it comes the end of the season, and I may be leading the league in batting. I mean, I can hit, you know?
Right.
I don't get picked for the All-Star team.
Ooh.
My assistant coach, Coach Mendrick, comes up to me. He's a good guy. He was a really good guy. I wish I could find him. He took me aside and said, Mike, you didn't make the All-Star team. And I was like, okay. He said, Mike, listen, there was a lot of discussion about this, but the reason why they didn't pick you ultimately is because you can't run. And so they took guys that could hit almost as good as you but could run, because now it's the big time. You're going to the All-Stars, and they want to win the state tournament and all that stuff. And he said,
ouch.
I don't want you to get angry at me. I just want to let you know that, you know, maybe Mike, if you drop a little weight, you know, you'd be a better player. You'd be a better runner and bat faster, whatever, you know. And I looked at him and I said, and I thought to myself, as he was, I remember it was like it was yesterday. It's over 50 years ago. And I remember it was like, you know, I am a fat little kid and I can't run, and I'm a 400 hitter and they're picking 350 hitters that can run. I understand why they did that. And so I wasn't mad at him at all. I just said, okay, Coach Smith, because I knew he was coming from a place where he really cared about me. He really cared, you know?
Right.
Well, I took that guidance. I didn't lose any weight. You know, I still went back home and ate a hoagie, you know what I mean? But
Or two.
I wasn't upset. And you know what? I didn't even tell my parents that, because my parents would have said, hey, I mean, that's the way it is, Mike. I mean, you know, in life, you know, there are various filters and there are standards there. I mean, that's the way it is. So could you imagine
today
a little league coach saying that to a kid? I mean, that's a lawsuit right there.
It's laughable, right?
And so parents would have not been upset about that, because the guy didn't do it in a demeaning way. He just said it in a factual way. Nor would my dad was a ball player, so he knew. Nor would they have launched a lawsuit against the Little League to get me on that team. But these were the days when everybody did not get a trophy.
Right.
I was a terrible student, and so, you know, I got decent grades on some things, and the things that I sucked at, I got bad grades. It was that simple. I didn't make honor roll. I didn't complain. I mean, I just, you know, I didn't blame my teachers. My academic record, or lack thereof, was on me. Now, I'm not building myself up to be anything special. That's how you were raised. That's how that whole generation, that's how we were raised back then. That's just the way it is. Not good enough for National Honor Society? Not good enough. Just the way it is. When I graduated high school, I was, I believe, 220 out of 228 in my high school class. So I'd like to think I was conserving energy, Mac, but I really was a bad student. You know, I didn't really care. You know, you wouldn't have told me I was ever going to college.
Oh, no. Mike, let me just tell you something. And you know, we're like in a number of ways. And I went to Catholic school. I used to get student achieving below apparent capability. Oh my God. It was like a quarterly event. And I remember my dad, who was not home very much, but in the winter he would be home, and my mom drug him to report card night. And he came home and he was pissed. He said, why did they all say the same thing? And I don't know, I might have been in seventh grade, or I was smart enough to have a smart mouth. And he said, why are they always saying that you are achieving below your apparent capability? And I looked at him and said, I think they're over-assessing my capabilities. And he said, he said, if you ever even think about saying something like that again to me, I'll knock you right through that wall. I said, yes, sir. And he said, you get your ass in gear. But, I mean, again, getting called out when you need to be called out is a part of the reconciliation process of learning life's number one skill, and that is overcoming adversity. So, anyway, I interrupted you. Keep going.
No, that's exactly right. And so, you know, I saw a steady decline in people wanting to hold others accountable, and which bred people that did not want to be held accountable or rebelled whenever somebody had the gall to hold them accountable at the simplest stuff. So you grew up in the generation, younger listeners won't believe this, but you grew up in the generation, Mac. I know it was Sam, I've never talked to you about this before, but when I was walking on the way to elementary school, if me and my buddies were goofing off, some adult would stop their car and say, "Hey, come here. What are you guys doing? Stop that." You know, and we listened to them like we listened to an adult, like, you know, in the good sense. Now, if I did that, the mother would say, "Who are you to talk to them? Give me your license plate. I'd be, you know, sexual predator or whatever." Oh, you know, right. So society's learned, don't say a word. You know, you're in a movie theater or a restaurant, you see the kid acting up, and you're waiting for the parents, like, do something, you know? Like, your kid is disrupting the whole movie. Do something. And you don't really dare say anything. You'll end up getting thrown out. So I think we've come to the point now, if you see what's going on with this whole sexual misconduct thing, I think we just hit the tip of the iceberg on that. It hasn't even hit academia yet.
No.
Hasn't really hit the government or military yet. But I actually think we're at an inflection point, Mac, where all of that past stuff is coming home to roost right now. And I can't say I'm surprised. I don't think it's surprised, but we, as a society, and maybe even as a world, certainly as an American society, we not only lost sight, some people blindfolded the nation's youth as they were growing up and told them that millennia-tested things, honesty, integrity, whatever, things that have been found over thousands of years to be the right and wrong and the better or the ineffective things, those pretty much went out the window. And so, I don't know if you saw the recent letter the West Point instructor wrote about West
God.
Point.
Yeah, oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, and so that's West Point.
Yeah.
And I believe everything he wrote. I'm not a grad. I have no inside information. But I believe that there are Annapolis grads that could write similar letters. Now, that's an institution that's still probably way harder. Now, what about the civilian academia, Matt? What about that? What about what's going on there, you know? So the standards have dipped so much that, you know, what's the one thing you could always count on a West Point or Annapolis grad? You know, these guys had gone through a very demanding academic system, for sure, and they had gone through a four-year system where the slightest breach of integrity, the slightest lie, they were gone. They were absolutely gone. And evidently, over the last few decades, that has been greatly relaxed to the point where when I was a TBS instructor, Mac, we had a kid go through TBS. He was a minority. And he was a Naval Academy graduate. He took 5 years to graduate from the Naval Academy, which was unheard of unless you were physically injured. Like Ollie North got hurt.
Right.
You know, healed up and then came back. So, but they didn't give five, you know, an extra year for the most cases. Very, very rare. So, you know, the realist in me tells me that, you know, this, you know, nobody wanted to appear racist and, you know, you need minorities and all that. So the kid was granted a fifth year and he got through. Mac, he could not pass the basic school academically. But listen to what I just said. He could not pass basic school academics. Now, I'm a fan of the basic school. We've both been on the staff. But there's no way in hell basic school academics is even remotely challenging as the Naval Academy curriculum. I want to believe that. So how do you get a guy that's supposedly a graduate of the Naval Academy that cannot pass the test that we were running? I mean, did you ever hear of a kid not passing TBS academically? I never heard one until that time. So it came time, the Marine Corps said, we're going to discharge this guy. You know, he's been here a year, it's time, you know, he's got to go. You know what happened? the Navy stepped up and said, we'll take him. We'll take him. So I don't really, I have no ill will toward that young man. I actually felt sorry for him because somewhere along the line, he was glad-handed through high school.
Right.
He was glad-handed evidently through the Naval Academy. Now he gets to the basic school. He can't pass these classes. He's got no study habits. His writing looks like, let's just put it this way. I'm not looking for a Nobel laureate, you know,
right.
Pulitzer Prize winning,
right.
But he wrote maybe on a very poor fifth or sixth grade level. And so I stepped back and looked, and I actually felt sorry for him, and this kid's been lied to a lot of his life. Where's he go? You know, what's he do? What did he do in the Navy? I mean, where's he? I don't get it. And so that's just one that I ran into. You and I both know that the military has many, many instances like that. And the military is far better, I think, than the civilian world. So, you know, we've just gone to the point where, you know, like in ancient Rome where, you know, only the heroes got the laurels around their head. And then at some point, you know, they were handing laurels. Everybody was a hero, you know?
Well, and I guess, Mike, I guess that's a phenomenon in, and maybe it's as timeless is bitching about young people. But the standard doesn't get eroded by young people. The standard gets eroded
right.
by those who lead young people. For instance, is hazing a problem or the symptom of a problem? I would argue that it's a symptom of a problem. If you have hazing, you don't have leadership at the platoon level. You don't have leadership at the squad level because these, we're going to get these PFCs and, you know, from SOI or whatever. We know the gifted in our squads. We know the gifted in the platoon. And I don't know Marines that when their platoon sergeant, who's worth his weight, looks at them and says, there'll be no stupidity tonight because everybody got it. We're not doing that. The answer to that is, yes, platoon sergeant, right? And guess what? It doesn't happen. So when you see these things happen, they happen in a leadership vacuum where it's okay, either tacitly or overtly. It's okay. And so to me, that's not the lance corporals and the corporals that are down there doing that hazing. It's the sergeant and the staff sergeant that are supervising it that allow that to occur. So, Mike, what is it about when we get to junior management and mid-level management in the Marine Corps that and even upper-level management, we struggle with the standard. I mean, I will tell you, how, you can't believe the number of people like, well, we don't really field day anymore. Well, what do you do? Well, we kind of do a good cleanup. Does anybody inspect it? Well, first sergeant walks through. Company commander walk through? Oh, no. Battalion commander walk through? No. Interesting. And so then you get into this discussion about leadership in combat. You say, you know where you prepare for leadership in combat? Where's that, sir? In garrison every day the way you do business. The attention to detail, the inspections. Your young NCOs and staff NCOs walking up to you before an inspection and say, sir, here's what you're going to find. So-and-so's missing this. So-and-so's got to rip this. And then if you don't find anything else, what do you know? That dude's locked away. Those Marines are squared away. I don't need to worry about them. Cross them off my inspection list. That guy's good to go. As long as he's here, we're good. And that is the timeless way, but we've lost our way. And I don't know if we're so tied to computers. And Paris Island is a good example. Jarvis Lynch, General Hoare, all these guys who've been CGs there. Barney Barnum just was on, who was not a CG, but, you know, he was a battalion commander down there. He said, it's easy. You get your ass from behind the desk. You go meet those drill instructors. You know them by name. You know their family. You get out and you do that often. And they know that you're looking. And you inspect them. And that's worked for decades. Why, Mike, are we now so tied into our computers and all the different PowerPoints that we have to produce that we don't go out and do the blocking and tackling drills anymore that create the basis for, you know, the pre-patrol checks, making sure that so-and-so's got his stuff, and you learn that by inspecting Charlie's back at Camp Pendleton. Why, I guess, is the question.
Well, I think you're onto something, and I think if there are any younger folks listening to this broadcast, you know, about to enter the military or even in the military still, I think they need to take a step back because they can learn a thing or two from us old timers. I think you're absolutely right. I share your opinion on how you lead and how Marines are led and their expectations in peacetime is exactly how they operate in combat. The shining of boots and the haircuts and making sure their uniforms are right, that stuff goes away in combat. What it is replaced by is that Lance Corporal making sure that everybody in his fire team has fresh batteries in their night optics, that the radios are on the proper frequencies. I mean, there's no time to shine boots now. We're deep into, you know, Helmand province or whatever.
But there is time to clean your weapon.
Yes, and that's exactly right. That's why the first thing I've ever taught about the weapon is, I remember the drill instructor saying, Marines, you'll clean this rifle before you clean your scuzzy body, because this rifle will keep you alive. So if you ever get into a situation where it's a choice between cleaning yourself and cleaning the rifle, you clean the rifle. Because if you're in that kind of situation, it's pretty desperate. That rifle's got to work. It's got to work, you know? And you can live a long time with, you know, being filthy and all that. So never forgot that, you know? And, you know, our tradition is coming out of the field, and, you know, you let guys get Gatorade or something, you sit down, and they clean the weapons. They take care of the weapons. They do it, you know? So I agree entirely. By the way, I served at Parris Island under Jarvis Lynch and General Hoare, and I can attest to the fact that as a series officer, the SOP dictated that I must be on the PT field. You know, there's no latitude with a series officer. You will do this, you will do that, you have to be there 30 minutes. It's pretty much a recipe. You have to be there, you got to do this, it tells you what to do. Can't tell you how many times both of those generals came onto the PT field by themselves. Like my battalion commander was unannounced. He would just come, and I got to know them, but I especially got to know General Hoare fairly well, as fair as a captain could know a major general, and we had several discussions, long discussions, to where my series was running off the field, and I would just give the assistant series commander the high sign, say, I'm talking to a general, you take him in, you know, I mean, just the way it is, you know. Right. And he was a great guy, but I agree. I 20 years, Mac. It'll be 20 years in April that I retire from the Marine Corps. So I don't know how the Marine Corps is nowadays. I'm proud of them. I've seen these guys fight. I realize progress is made. There's all sorts of technology now, but the old timer in me wants to believe that despite all the technology and the computers, people are getting off of their asses and going out and actually seeing Marines, being involved in the Marines. Let me give you two examples.
All right.
Hold on,
Mike. I got to take a break, if you don't mind. I got to take about a 4-minute break, so you can go get a glass of water, make a head call, whatever. My guest today is Mike Etor, and we have to go back to your, if you were Queen for a day at DOD, and also the enlisted issue in when you joined the Marine Corps relative to race. So I don't want to forget about that. I don't want to forget about those two things. But Mike Etor, my guest. Mike retired as a major, Mike?
Yep.
Major, United States Marine Corps. He's a former winner is probably the wrong word, but he's a recipient of the Leftwich Trophy for company grade leadership in the United States Marine Corps. And so he and I crossed paths at the basic school and have been able, through All Marine Radio, to renew our connection. And today we're just talking leadership. And you really, what we're zeroing in on is this. It's not the young people of the country. It's the people that are writing the standards. It's the people that are supposed to inspect. It's the people that continue to say these things aren't important. This structure isn't important. These requirements aren't important. This supervision isn't important. Yet we still think we're going to go out there and achieve these standards. It clearly is a recipe for failure. Clearly. So we're going to continue that discussion, weaving in and out of the history of the Marine Corps. So give us about 4 minutes. Take a quick break. Mike Moore of Michael Ettore coming up next right here on All Marine Radio.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do. And I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marine.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
E23 on Thursday here on the west coast of the United States of America. Mike Etor joins us. Mike, email. Hey, Mac, I've crossed paths relative to time in the Marine Corps with Mike Etor. We've never met personally. What is his company called again, and is he on the web? So, Mike, how do people track you down?
My company is called Fidelis Leadership Group, and my website is fidelisleadership.com.
Okay, fidelisleadership.com. All right. Yep. Let me read you another email. An age-old problem that you all talk about today, but for whatever reason, it seems to be happening in spades inside the Department of Defense. I'm curious, what is the remedy? Is the remedy simply good leaders that do understand structure, that set an example, and then senior leaders that fire people that won't adhere to these standards? Mike, so let's talk about remedies. Well, okay, let me hit pause. We'll talk about that. We'll deal with this question next in terms of remedies. To this, because it is, it's an age old problem, yes, but it seems to be more acute now, and I think for cultural reasons, and that may just simply be the march of time. I don't know. Let's go backwards. Before we allow you to be queen for a day at the DOD, let's talk about your experience relative to the Marine Corps racism in the 70s.
Before we do that, let me go back to the couple of examples I was going to talk about the hazing, because I want to close that out, Mac.
Okay.
Then we'll go to, because it ties right into the racism. So relative to getting out and seeing your folks, so I took over Weapons Company 1A. It was a good company. The previous commander did a good job. Staff NCOs did a good job. The company that I inherited, and then new guys came in, was the strongest staff NCO and officer group, pound for pound, that I ever worked in. These guys were good, really good. Even better, I had a ton of great corporals and sergeants and lance corporals and corporal billets. So I had great NCOs, and I proceeded to tell them, look, my philosophy is I only got 6 lieutenants, you know, 8 staff NCOs, but I got like 60 or 70 NCOs, and that's where the bulk of the power and authority is going to be in this company. You guys got to do it. So I gave sergeants and corporals a lot of authority and latitude, and so they were loving life. They were doing the right thing. Well, we get over to Saudi Arabia. We're staging to go into Kuwait, and I noticed that I'm walking around the training areas, watching things and all of that, and I'm seeing Marines doing push-ups or whatever, you know, as like incentive PT.
Right.
So I'm looking at this. I'm like, I asked the first sergeant, what is this? What's going on? I said, well, you know, when someone messes up, sir, they staff sergeant or sergeant drops them for 10 or whatever. I'm like, oh, okay. And this was kind of new to me. I'm like, all right, you know, let's watch this. Well, because I had been a drill instructor, and all of my staff NCOs had been drill instructors, and they loved the empowerment that I gave them and the NCOs, I think they got out of hand. Well, I know they did. Things got out of hand because I started, you know, just walking to the battalion headquarters. I'd see, you know, staff NCOs with two or three Marines, and he's making them do bends and thrusts or whatever. So I saw this for like 2 days. So I had a meeting, told the first sergeant, get all the officers and staff NCOs together. And I told them, I was talking to the staff NCOs, really. I said, look, you know, because the lieutenants didn't know any better. I said, I see what's going on, and I got to ask you, I mean, we're getting ready to go into combat. Treating Marines like that's what you did in boot camp. That's what I did as a drill instructor. I agree with it in boot camp, but do we have Marines so bad now that you've got to PT them on the quarterdeck like recruits? And so I saw the staff NCOs. They already started giving me that look like, right, holy shit, he's, you know, here it comes. And so I said, I think it's poor leadership. It's not going to happen anymore. Unless, I said, no, I was a drill instructor. I'm your commanding officer. How about this? When I see you guys mess up, I'm going to PT you in front of your platoon. How about that? And they just looked at me mortified. And I said, now, I'm not going to do that because that's poor leadership. And you're not going to treat these Marines like recruits anymore. And Mac, if a horrific problem was a 10, mine might have gotten to a 1.5. But I knew this is bullshit. This is not what staff NCO and NCO leadership is supposed to be. I'm the commander. I saw it because I'm walking around. I don't like it. And I'm going to yoke them up and I'm going to stop it right now. And I don't think I was unique in what I would do, but I had to be out and about. If I was in my tent doing captain stuff, there's always paperwork to do, but if I was in there, I wouldn't have seen this.
Right.
And I'm telling you, it would have got out of control because that kind of physical hazing or whatever, group tightening, almost always results in overreach and physical injury. And now you've got a good staff NCO that went too far and he's up for a general court martial because he put some kid die out or something unknowingly.
Right.
So that's the first one. The second one is we're getting ready.
Hey, okay, Mike, would you give that advice to anybody who's in a management position that, look, your computer will suck the life out of your soul. If your computer could induct you through one of the ports into the computer, it would. Okay? You have to fight to delegate stuff and to get away from that thing. To get away from that thing so you can find out what's real. What's on your computer isn't real. What's out, what they're doing out there, that's real. So is that a constant fight for a leader now?
That is a constant fight, and everything you just said is what I tell clients. I mean, I was just with a client yesterday, and it was a female, and she's a good person, good leader. She'd been a hell of a Marine. I just told her, you've got to fight this. You've got to have periods where you just shut that computer and you get out and walk amongst your people. You've got to do it because they don't see you. You don't know them. How are you going to know that? You know, how are you going to be able to spot something if you're always in your office? And so I give that to almost all of my clients because almost all of my clients are guilty of that.
Right.
They're executives. They walk in with their briefcase in the morning. They go behind the glass doors, you know, and that's it. And these are good people.
Right.
Almost none of them have been taught by their predecessor to get out and walk around. Whereas you and I had the ability, we had the fortune as young Marines. We saw all of a sudden the company commander walking around, the first sergeant, the sergeant major. Yeah, we saw that. So leadership walking amongst us, asking us in the chow hall, where are you from, Marine? How's the chow? You know, the commanding. We got used to seeing that so that when we became leaders, we didn't even have to get taught that. It's kind of baked in our DNA. You get up and you go to the chow hall and see how your Marines are being fed. You know, you don't wait for somebody to complain because they may not complain, you know? So, yeah, that's a leadership concept or fundamental that works in the military, and it definitely works in the civilian world, and it works really well in the civilian world. People want to talk to their leaders. They want to see their leaders. The leaders get out there, and they find out that, geez, it's ungodly hot on the third floor. Like, yeah, well, how long has it been that way? Well, it's been that way for a couple of years. Well, what's the problem? We don't know. Well, let's get it fixed. And so the guy gets an air conditioning problem fixed, and he's a hero among the people that have been sweating it out on the third floor because they complained it didn't get up the chain of command. And this is a real story, Mac. They complained it didn't get up the chain of command. And these poor people are literally sweating because the third floor is like a sauna here in Tampa, Florida. New leader comes in, walks down, and within the first week finds this problem. He's thinking, well, this is an easy one. All I got to do is get the AC guy to come in and fix it. And he was, but that told him, he was an experienced leader, that told him, if I got a problem that simple, that's been going on that long, I better do a lot of walking around and talking to people because there's certainly more.
Mike Etor, my guest, I'm conjuring images of people who get to work very, very early and who work really long hours and go to but most of the time they're on the phone and they're on their computer, take a break for lunch and meetings, and they're overwhelmed by this beast that comes at them through their computer, and I remember growing up in the Marine Corps. Guys like Marty Steele was my battalion commander at 1st LAV Battalion when the battalion stood up. And I one day I asked him, I'm like, how are you at all these things? I get off my vehicle at like 2 in the morning at a FARP at Camp Pendleton, and all of a sudden I hear, hey, Mac, how are you? And it's Lieutenant Colonel Steele. And I looked, and I'm like, who's that? I'm like, sir? He said, yeah, how's everything going? I said, well, the goddamn water table is so high here, all we do is recovery operations, for God's sakes. And he just started laughing. He said, things sound okay. I said, no, they're not. I said, it's pissing me off because we don't know how to drive in this stuff yet. But it's like, how is Steele there at 2 in the morning? You know, and so he and I had a talk about it. He said, well, let me just tell you my day. He said, I'm up at 4:30. He said, I'm shower and I'm into work. And I checked my email. Now, email was in its infancy, you know, then. And I checked my paperwork, you know, that you know, we had green machine messages that came through, right? So he's checking the message traffic. And he said, and I look at the planner. I have my day ready. And then I go to chow with the sergeant major. I said, and he said, I got to eat. And I just walking through the chow hall is my inspection. He said, on the way back, we cut through the company areas to make sure the cleanup's all done. And, you know, it just how do you sew in getting out and about and doing it? Well, how did they do it? It was just a daily pattern of their life that had been handed down to them by good leaders. And so, so again, it's interesting. But now I think it's worse because of everything that comes to you through that computer, change you and keeps you from doing, I think, the most important thing, and that is getting out and inspecting, because when you inspect, you're prepping for combat. And a lot of people don't make that connection, and they're stupid because of it, but that's how you do it. Yeah. That time-honored Charlie's inspection, that time-honored field day inspection, of looking at somebody's picture on a mantle or on a desk and saying, who's this? So that's my girl, and those are my parents. Oh, you're from Nebraska? Because there's all this red Nebraska, you know, sweatshirts involved in the picture. Oh, yes, sir. Like, yeah, well, their football team sucks. Well, you just made a friend, right? He's a football fan now, and every time you bump into him, he's gonna say, hey, sir, go Huskers. And you're going to say, they suck, bro. And but that is the genesis of leadership. So it's interesting. Now take me back to Pendleton, and then the DOD.
Well, the second example I was going to tell you about the inspections and all of that and supervision. I mean, because I had I was doing it right, I believed, and so my NCOs learned and all. That was my biggest thing back, because I wanted to leave NCOs and officers behind me that could teach this stuff to future generations, because I knew I was going, and you know, you can't stay around forever. So hopefully, you know, I'm vain enough to hope that some of Mike Etor's leadership that he got from World War II and Korea and Vietnam guys, some of that that I got from them and I passed on to other people. Hopefully some of that was in Fallujah. I hope so, you know. And I wasn't the only one. Obviously, there were tens of thousands of us. So that's how the Marine Corps survived all these years, is the unwritten lessons, the unprescribed routines. What you just talked about, General Steele doing,
that's
what all my commanders did. That's what I did as a commander. And you know what, Matt, even better, that's what I did as a civilian executive, and it's the recipe for success out here. If you can actually provide face-to-face contact, be a human, be a good leader, see if their area is too hot, they don't have a water fountain, things like, I mean, if you can just do simple things like that, you're automatically in the top 10% of executive leadership in America. It's that easy in some respects. So fast forward, or go back to Kuwait. We're about to go into Kuwait. I have weapons company. We have all these CAT teams and all that.
Right.
And something just told me, I said, I had good guys on the 50 cals, but like all Marines, they think they're experts at everything. And I knew these guys were taking these weapons apart further than they were allowed to.
Right.
And to make sure they were clean, because they wanted to go kick ass, you know, they were crossing the LOD.
Right.
So I told the lieutenant, I said, just humor me. I want the battalion armorer to come by one last time and look at our 50 cals. And Mark 19s. He said, well, sir, I'm telling you, they're clean as a whistle. I've inspected them. I said, no, I get that. But you know, the armorers have extra knowledge and they're the one to be able to spot that little tiny spring that isn't strong enough. He goes, fair enough. So the inspection happens. He comes back to me kind of sheep-faced, and he says, you're not going to believe it. I'm like, what? He goes, I don't know how many guns. Let's say we had 20 50 cals. Of the 20 50 cals we had, six or seven of them were inoperable because the gunners had taken them down too far, put a spring in backwards, or done something.
Right.
So he said, essentially, they would have each fired one shot, and that would have been it. And so naturally the armor repaired them and turned the spring around or whatever, but that was a lesson right there. And that's what I'm trying to convey to your listeners that are still doing this, is make sure in your position of authority, if you have the ability and your gut feeling to order that one last inspection, it can't hurt. Even if it's not necessary, have someone else with fresh eyes take a look at it. We found seven machine guns, Mac, that weren't going to fire.
Wow.
And amazingly, a lot of the Gulf War, people didn't do anything. Our CAT teams actually ran into enemy, and those 50 cals on a couple occasions were actually blazing. So it was a profound leadership lesson for some of those guys, and I repeat it to anyone, any audience that'll listen to it, because you can substitute machine guns for heavy equipment, computers, information system, whatever a business does out there. You can substitute it for that, you know, and make sure that someone hasn't unknowingly made something unsafe or inoperable. So those are my two stories. Hopefully they lend some kind of some weight to the topics that we're talking about.
Mike, okay, now I want to transition to, you know, you being king or queen for a day, whichever you prefer, at the DOD. What would your message be there?
Okay, my first message is in response to the person that emailed about, you know, DOD and all that. The bottom line is this: we are the Department of Defense. I think we should go back to Department of War. The Department of Defense belongs. It exists, Mac, as I'm sure you agree. Despite the formal titles, they are here to kill people and break things when directed by competent authority. We are, you know, to defend the nation via projecting combat power. We got to be ready to go. And I think too much civilian world has snuck into the DOD. I've always said that when you have civilians, congressmen and people like that, when you have civilians acting like generals, and generals acting like civilian executives and congressmen, it's a recipe for disaster. And I think that we have, at the top, systematically over the last 30 years or so, I think our leaders, officer and enlisted, have tried to show a level of sophistication. We're just as good as Fortune 500. We're going to bring in these novel management techniques. Difference is, if it doesn't work in the Fortune 500 arena, all right, somebody gets fired. They don't meet sales projections or whatever. If it doesn't work in the DOD, you have a tanker ship coming at a Navy vessel. It's going to strike in 2 minutes, and some lieutenant on the deck or whatever doesn't have he doesn't have the ability to take action and ring the bell, do something. I'm picking on the Navy, but the Marine Corps does it too,
right.
You know?
Right, no.
So if I was in charge of DOD, if I was Mattis, I got a couple things. The first one is easily fixed, but it just bugs the hell out of me. Mattis, fix the award system relative to the timing of the awards being given. I hate to hear about Marines doing something heroic, and by the time we get the kid his Navy achievement with V or his Bronze Star or whatever, it's 3 years later and he's already out. And in some cases, it gets mailed to him. I hate that.
Right.
I don't know, and the Army's much better at it. You know, I think, you know, you could say a lot about the Army or war system, they give them away, whatever. You know, that's subjective. But one thing's for sure, they're way better at getting awards quicker. So I knew I was going to talk about this, so humor me on it, Mac.
Sure.
John Bazelon, Manila John Bazelon, kicking ass in late October on Guadalcanal. He's mowing Japanese down. Hundreds, if not a couple thousand. I mean, just mowing them down.
Right.
That's late October, 1942. In May of 1943, he receives the Medal of Honor in Australia from General Vandegrift. That's the ceremony. Less than a year later, after his heroic action, he's back in the United States on a war bond drive. Now, we didn't have computers. We didn't have cell phones. Nothing digital. How in the hell did the nation's highest award get approved so that guy got it 7 months later? It's got to take at least 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years now to get a Medal of Honor. And then look at the lesser awards. So I'm not bitching about the award system or the validity of awards. It's like, Mattis, put a foot in someone's ass, DOD-wide, get with Dunford, and establish a service-wide criteria that awards will be actioned and given a yes or no vote within X amount of months or whatever the case may be. Because, and our beloved Marine Corps, I think, is the worst at it, Mac.
Right.
The worst at it.
Well, you know what, Mike? I think there's a simple solution to that, and that is I don't think awards boards understand, you know, like, okay, I want, and I used to say this, okay, everybody nod their head. If he gets a Navy comm with a V, you don't have to take yours off and give him. He can have one of his own, and you get to keep yours too, okay? Does everybody understand that concept? Okay? Shake your head. Nod it. All right, everybody understands it, that you don't have to give your Bronze Star with a V up if we give him one, all right? We have a fairly large supply of these things. But you sit in those awards boards and you think, are you shitting me?
Yeah.
So, well, just my own little bitch about the Marine Corps.
Yeah, so that's the first one. I think Mattis needs to, you know, he's got a great opportunity with him and Dunford to get, why are some services faster? Are you telling me the Army's more competent? Are they writing better? I mean, come on. So I think he needs to yoke him up on this. And again, I'm not talking about the validity of awards, or I'm talking about the speed. Let's go. Because I'll tell you what, if this was a civilian business, Mac, and there was money involved, the Marine Corps for sure would be broke. They'd be a failed business because the customer would go to the Army or the Air Force because, hey, I'm buying an award and these people get it to me quicker. I mean, I hate to put it in that context, but it's like, it just pisses me off to see Marine deserving, they need to get that award in front of the members of their unit that they earned it in, if possible. Not 3 years later. I mean, you read this Lance Corporal's, you know, Navy Comm with V citation, it's beyond question he deserved the award. Why did it take 3 years, and why did he get it in a manila envelope at home?
You know,
seriously?
Mike, I'll give you I'll give you, I just forgot what I was going to say, relative to awards, and you were just talking about here, one of the things I say, and I'm not a good parent, okay, I'll admit that. I have good kids, I don't know that I'm a good parent. But as they become teenagers, and you hear stupid stuff comes out of their mouths, and I'd say this stuff to Marines, too. Look, I bet you if I, you know, when they come back and say, I can't do that, or this is too hard, or whatever, you know, I always say, I bet you if I told you that I'll give you $1 million if you'll solve that, or if I bet you if I go get my 45 and tell you I'll blow your brains out if you don't do it, I'll bet you do that right now. You find a way to get it done today. And then you just get, like, this stupid look. All right, so let's just pretend I offered you $1 million to solve that problem and get that done. You think you'll get it done? Yes, sir. We'll go get it done. It just, and Mike, I'm with you. It's infuriating that somehow or other, I don't know, maybe we should have cash awards for getting awards out on time. You get a bonus if you get these awards out on time, not just reenlisting, but we'll have all kinds of financial bonuses to incentivize your performance. But it's a joke. It's stupid.
Yeah, I hope Mattis would, General, if you're listening to this, shine the light on that. This is an easy one. You fix it. You fix it with leadership. Put a foot in someone's ass on this one.
Okay, keep going.
Well, the second one's a bigger one. The second one's a bigger one, Mac. And if there's any upper level guys listening, it might piss them off. But I am encouraging Mattis to talk to his generals and everybody else and immediately do a DOD wide stand down and come up with a plan to eliminate any form of lying or misrepresentation of facts, data, readiness levels, or whatever. In other words, Mattis, you're the guy that can finally get in there with Dunford and eliminate all sorts of previously approved and sanctioned lying. That's a bold statement.
That is.
Mike, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Aviation readiness statistics.
No.
Is that helicopter up or down? You were in LAVs, Mac. Anything but rolling stock, you got a report. Is it up or down?
Right.
Now, everybody knows if you report the absolute honest truth, headquarters doesn't want to hear the absolute honest truth. So our squadron's up, ready to go. Well, not really. These two birds here, but we can get them up if we.
Yeah.
So it got bastardized.
That
is the bird up or not?
Right.
Not really. But if we got the order to go and we had to float right now, you know, deploy right now, we could get it fixed within 24 hours. So it's up. And I got to tell you, Mac, that has been there for a long time, probably. Post-World War II, Vietnam, you had guys in Vietnam getting relieved over that and all that. The body count,
Mike, I think that's an oral tradition, though, in the Marine Corps. I think that is, you know, remember that video passed down through generations? I think that behavior,
yes.
because Mike, you're exactly right. Well, it's down. We can't fly it. But if we had to go, we'd cannibalize 4273,
yes.
and it would those parts we can't do it now. But if we had to go, it would bring that one up, that one up, and that one up. So technically, no, they're not down. They're not down. What?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that how we do it? And the other thing,
so,
Mike, is to ask me to do it when nobody else is doing it means that I'm going to be the shitbird. My readiness is going to suck, and his readiness is worse than mine. But if I report that way. I'm not going to say my career is going to be ended, but my future assignments might be impacted.
It's going to be ended. That's why it's got to be DOD level. You know, the Marine Corps, we had the fitness report system that you and I went, and then I retired, and then the new system came in, and they had to do that to theoretically eliminate all the inflation and all of that. So, Mattis, you got to come up with Dunford. You got to come up with a system. You can save face. Everybody doesn't have to say, look, we've been lying for 40 or 50 years on these things. Save face, bring a new program. Hey, we're going to report in a different way, fresher statistics, more real-time data and all that. But the bottom line is this. You cannot have an organization. These guys have been talking shit for years, and I'm one of them. Integrity, this and that. And then turn right around and say, however, in these circumstances, Lieutenant, it's okay to lie. In fact, if you don't lie, and everybody knows you're lying, if you don't lie, you're not going to get promoted. Well, that's, you know, that's troubling to me. When I was the CEO of a warrant officer basic company at Quantico, my XO came and said, sir, we got like several Marines that want to talk to you in private. I'm like, okay, well, this is midway through the course, and they were all aviation and mechanic type guys, you know, rolling stock guys, maintenance guys. And so I got them in a classroom. I said, what's up? What's the matter? They said, sir, look, we're singing the school song here. We believe you. All this integrity, this, we got it, sir. But we're going to go back now. We're officers, and we got to sign off on this. And, sir, I'm telling you, if I go back to my squadron and I issue absolutely 100% factual reports, is the bird up or down, I'm going to get fired. There's, you know, and they weren't worried about their careers. They just said, I'm going to get crushed by the system. And I didn't know what to say to them. I talked to them and all. I said, let me think about it and get back to you, you know. But I hated the fact that those guys came to me saying, I am now wearing bars and I'm going back to where I just came from. And these are good people, but the whole institution, in some cases, lying is this SOP. You don't dare say that half your birds are down. And I believe, Mac, that that's probably got ripple effects in budgetary things and all that, because eventually the bird's going to break. It can't fly. But everybody's been lying. So where does it end? And I'm saying, Mattis, you can end it now because we have so much problems, Mac, with senior officers and senior enlisted doing funky things, integrity violations, lack of judgment, doing things you're horrified. It's like, wait a minute. At the heart of it, these guys have been raised in an institution. And it pains me to say this because I was raised there too. But the reality is they've been raised in an institution where we prize integrity above all, except if you're in this MOS or in these circumstances. And obviously we don't dare. We don't dare submit a factual, accurate report because that's not the way we do it. I can tell you that as an officer in a publicly traded firm, which I was, if I lied about something like a motor T officer lies or a squadron commander lies and all that, if I got caught lying in a publicly traded company, Mac, I'm going to go to trial. I'm going to jail.
Right.
Because it's illegal for me to misrepresent any data, fact, whatever, that the shareholder is supposed to know. For instance, as the CIO of the company, I was in charge of all technology. So the CEO would announce on an earnings call, Q1 earnings call, okay, we're putting in a PeopleSoft upgrade for our system, computer system, you know, customer management system. And it's going to take $20 million and 10 months to do. Now the Wall Street analysts and the investors know about that. Q2 earnings call, they come and say, hey, how's the PeopleSoft upgrade going? Well, I've already signed a paper certifying that it is, in fact, still on track for $20 million and 10 months. The minute I know that it's not, I am supposed to raise my hand and tell the CEO, he's supposed to raise his hand and do a press release and tell the investors, hey, it's now $25 million and it's going to take about a year and a half to complete. That's standard practice. When people get caught violating that in the publicly traded world, they go to jail, Mac. Why are our general officers and civilians and DOD, why are they held to a lesser standard? What's our readiness? What's the publicly stated readiness stats right now in DOD? And then peel off that top layer. What's the reality? What's the real deal? And anyone with any experience that listens to me talk knows there's probably a huge disparity. And I'm just saying, hey, things are so bad now in the civilian world, in Congress, integrity, in the upper ranks of the military and all of that. Not all. I mean, just we had such bad examples that the only way you hope to produce a better environment is to have a zero tolerance. But you know what? We are guilty. We need to clean all of it up. No lying allowed whatsoever. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it, Mac.
All right, Mike, and let me just the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And and I would tell you that the people that go on and have greater transgressions, the road to the greater transgressions is paved and enabled by lesser transgressions like falsifying readiness reports. Well, come on, we got to do that, right? Or, you know, or, and all the little things that you do where you can't tell the truth. You know, and so to me, and you're right, it has to be a new system where you're not culpable if for reporting the truth. And again, the only way you can take corrective action and solve issues is if you got the issue in front of you. I got a couple email questions, Mike. You've been very generous with your time, and then I'll let you go. First email question is, my take is that you guys are simply talking about old core leadership. Has it gone? Has the computer changed the terrain so much where everybody's sitting behind it? And who's minding the Marines? Question mark. Has the computer changed our lives that much, Mike, as leaders, that we're welded to that thing?
You know, it's a great question. I don't know what's happening in the Marine Corps right now, but if any Marines out there listening to me, let me just give you some contrast. As a company commander, I had no computer on my desk. I hadn't come down to that level yet. Right. I never got an email from my battalion commander. He never forwarded me. I never sent an email to my lieutenants. The way I talked to my seniors and subordinates was I actually got off my ass and went to see them, or they came to my office, or I went to the colonel's office. So logic would say that computer has consumed a lot of people. I have talked to a couple of retired colonels who worked for generals, and they say, Mike, because of email, there are general officers involved in stuff on a routine basis now that in your day might be at the lieutenant colonel level and below. But because there's email and they CC 25,000 people, everybody feels a need to get involved. And now you have major level problems being solved at the major general level. So they're in the firefight, and maybe they just need to take a step back and say, how did the Marine Corps run 30 years ago? How did my predecessor run Marine recruiting 30 years ago? What was his day? We were doing good 30 years ago. What was his day when he didn't have to spend 7 hours doing emails or doing all this other stuff, you know?
Right.
I don't.
Very different.
Just a thought, you know?
Very, very, very different day. And a final question. I've heard you talk about this before, Mac, and I've thought about it since listening to you. I do believe it's the intermediate level ranks, starting in the Marine Corps at the rank of captain, where you have substantial subordinates. I would link captain to staff sergeant, gunny. Starting there, we have a problem. We don't want to be, forgive my language, the pricks anymore. It seems to me that when I joined the Marine Corps, people were not afraid to do that. And it wasn't simply being that way to be that way. It was they were hard about standards, and the standards were about things that you're talking about, inspections, cleanliness, which are the backbone of the Marine Corps. And it's ironic when you think about it that those kind of things, as stupid as they seem, are the basis of the discipline that we use in combat. It is that. And what Mike Etor talked about relative to his 50 cal section is a perfect example of it. Doing it the right way. Touching those wires probably saved guys' lives. Lighting off a 50 cal certainly gets people's attention. To have it go boom, click, is certainly not the recipe for survival on the battlefield after you've announced your entrance to it. I hope General Neller and the other service chiefs are able to right this ship relative to intermediate level leadership and those above them who won't hold standards and won't give young people the structure they need. I've learned a lot by listening to the different leaders that come on All Marine Radio. Mr. Etor is certainly another great example of it. Appreciate you having him on today. All right, Mike, a final comment on leaders that won't hold standards.
Well, I'll use the example I was going to mention to you about the racial incidents in the early to mid-70s. We had draftees in the Marine Corps then. They were coming off of Vietnam. There was tremendous drug problem in the Marine Corps. There were definitely racial problems. I mean, I remember being at Camp Lejeune or Camp Pendleton, Mac, as a young enlisted man. You did not go outside your barracks at night. You just did not do it, you know. There were race riots. It was bad news. There was, you know, racial division in the chow hall. It was bad. Anybody from that era knows what I'm talking about.
Right.
Some of the other services kind of pussyfooted around it. The Marine Corps basically said, you know what, the hell with that. This is the Marine Corps. And we're going to attack this problem. We're going to get that. But at the end of the day, the people that saved the Marine Corps, the people that solved the Marine Corps' racial problems were not officers. They were staff NCOs and NCOs, most of whom who were really kicking ass were blacks and other minorities. Some of these black staff NCOs, Mac, when I was first in, they had gone through Montford Point. They had come into a Marine Corps
wow.
so racist that they had to go to a separate black boot camp. So now you see that old gunny or master sergeant telling the younger Marines, he's talking to us all, but especially the blacks, saying, you guys think you got it bad? You don't know shit. You weren't a Marine in the 1950s like I was. And here's what we're going to do. And so it was them talking to the black kids coming out of the ghettos and all that, saying, this is the Marine Corps. We're not back in Chicago. And I'm here as a black man and a gunnery sergeant or whatever saying, we're not doing this. We're not kicking someone's ass just because he's white or vice versa. And look at me, I got promoted. And so that kind of leadership, aided and abetted and enabled by officers, is what really did it. The general saying, well, you just can't do it. There's and the race, that wasn't doing shit, Mac. That wasn't working. That wasn't working at all. It was the staff NCO leadership that got down on the unit level where they are, and they're the ones that had talks and they led my example. And that's what saved the Marine Corps. There's no doubt in my mind about that. But I am telling you, as a proud Marine, there were incidents where myself, one time I was coming back from Liberty at Camp Lejeune. I was at Court Street. And Court Street was an infamous, you know, dive street back then. It was one street, bars, brothels, whatever. I mean, it was, and 10,000 Marines on Court Street on a Friday night. So I'm getting on a Marine Corps Liberty bus to go back. It's probably 1 a.m. I get on the bus, I look, and I'm the only white guy. There's all these black Marines in there. I step on the bus, I look at all the black Marines, and I just looked and smiled and turned around and got off the bus, and they were all like clapping, saying, smart move, white boy, or what? I knew better. Now, you may think, you've got to be kidding me, Mike. No, that was smart thinking back then. And unfortunately, if that bus was full of white guys back then, black kid getting on that bus probably would have gotten off, too. That's how bad things were, Mac. We had people getting beat. We had the officer of the day. Back then, it was not uncommon for him to have a Lance Corporal or PFC bodyguard carrying a baseball bat. And you might say, Mike, why would they do that? That PFC's job was to make sure that the officer of the day did not get jumped in the dark and have his pistol stolen. And so when he got posted, the first sergeant would say, your job is to protect this lieutenant. Because if someone comes in, you better be dead. You better be beating them off. And because that was happening, some of the officers were getting jumped, and their pistol would be taken. And the officer would get, you know, sucker punched or whatever the case may be. These were bad times, Mac, really bad times. And race riots, KKK riots, and all of that. And I'm telling you, it got cleaned up in a matter of 3 or 4 years once the staff NCOs realized, no, it's got to be us, not some PhD program from headquarters Marine Corps. So when I used to tell these stories in the early 80s when I became an officer, that had all gone to where people thought I was lying. People thought, I couldn't have been that bad, Mike. It couldn't have been that bad.
Right.
You talk to any staff NCO and officer of that era, and they'll tell you, oh, no, it actually was that bad. And I'll leave you with, if you know, you should talk to somebody someday. Find someone that was on the Kitty Hawk back when they had a race riot on the Kitty Hawk. It was a race riot, a flat-out race riot. And then talk to them after that about a series of actual instances where officers would be making their rounds at night and they'd get ambushed and beat up, killed, and in a couple of cases, thrown off the ship in the middle of the Pacific at night. No one knew where the officer was. Well, he got ambushed, thrown off the ship, and obviously dead, you know? So we've come a long way, and it was all company-grade leadership, primarily staff NCO, some junior officer level. And everything I just said and we've talked about today leadership-wise, Neller, if you're listening, you've got it. It's yours to save. I love the Marine Corps. I think it's in many respects better than ever. But you're playing for all the marbles at this point in time, General. You're playing for all the marbles because things are coming so fast and furious, you cannot depend on your civilian leadership. You have to take charge and make the Marine Corps, in some cases, the Marine Corps that you entered. And then in other cases, you got to preserve what you got now because it's actually better than the Marine Corps you and I entered. So I will leave you with a final caveat, Mac. If anybody's listening out there, I was not a great Marine. I'm a very forceful speaker. I'm not denigrating anybody that's there right now. I'm not a general officer staring at a document about transgenders. I don't have to fight that fight. I don't know what I would do. So it's easy for me to sit from the stands and nitpick.
Right.
I just ask anybody that's listening to me to realize it's coming from my heart and it's coming from a good place. I love the Marine Corps, and I want a Marine Corps that my grandson will be able to join someday and get to where your previous emailer just said, good old-fashioned Marine Corps leadership. It's the cure for everything.
You know, Barney Barnum told me when he would walk through his battery barracks, he would take his dog, his German Shepherd, and a baseball bat when he'd go through on a Saturday. And just as testament to what you say about how difficult the times were. That's him, Medal of Honor winner, two tours of Vietnam by the time he was battery commander, walking through the barracks with a baseball bat and a German Shepherd. Pretty amazing. Mike, first of all, I told you during the break, but I could do this all day. I love the conversations about leadership that we have, and I hope you'll continue to grace us with your presence and your expertise. Good luck with Fidelis, and thanks for coming on today.
My pleasure, Mac. Anytime you'll have me, I'll be here.
All right, bud. Have a good one. Thank you.
Okay, Semper Fi, take care.
Semper Fidelis. That is the one and only, Mike Etor. Another Mike's going to join us, and that is Mike Musselman. He's standing by, so we haven't heard from the Gunner since Monday, so we'll catch up with him. More of All Marine Radio on a Thursday coming up next, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Mac, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.